the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 195 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes and at nfl.com/Sheck. Oh, I am very excited for this particular episode. In just a few minutes, coming into Studio 66, one Mr. Elliot Harrison. Of course, you know him from NFL.com and NFL Network. He's kibitzing here and there about his power rankings. He's doing his weekly picks for us. We will do the Red Challenge Flag segment in which we pick the games, or I should say Elliot picks the games, against one handsome Hank. They go head-to-head, and if they disagree, they get to throw the red challenge flag at each other. And also, from around the league, you know him from the Around the League podcast and his very fine pages, Chris Wessling is also going to be joining us to talk about Romo. Romo has been the hot button, I think, since the season kicked off. I would say that the Tony Romo, the latest pick, has gotten the most heat of any single incident in the 2013 season. So we're going to debate his virtues. And really, for me, it's not any knock on Tony Romo, the player. Rather, it is the Romo-pologists around him who defend him as though we've all just imagined these crucial interceptions and turnovers he makes in the most crucial of times for his Dallas Cowboys. So we're going to have Elliot and his tag team partner will be Chris Wessling going pro Romo. And it will be me and the man seated directly across from me, all the way from across the pond, the Atlantic Ocean, the Miami Dolphins' biggest fan. It's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you, Dave.
I hope so.
This is a day I've been looking forward to for some time.
Well, I hope you're right in the brain for this.
I'm ready. You know, so you've often complained, as Elliot and I have, what, 2 or 3 weeks now, we've done our challenge flag segment.
Yes.
And you say that we always agree on everything. So I'm thrilled that
we
didn't agree on, well, obviously we're not going to agree on Romo, and that we get to slug it out here. I think this is the kind of drama you've been looking for.
Yeah, last Sunday, I encourage you, Nate Demand, that you go over to, what is it, at NFL underscore Harrison.
At Harrison underscore NFL.
And
it makes sense.
At NFL UK Hank. They had quite a bitter back and forth on the Twitter about Romo's virtues and his bad points. We'll extend that. A lot of people who are regular listeners of the show immediately began tweeting me, are these two going to be in the same room together? I assured them that they would be, and soon enough they will. But Handsome, you got to keep your game face on, because a real treat coming through the door in just a couple minutes before Elliot and Wessling do is Brian Hartline of your beloved Miami Dolphins.
That's very exciting.
Real quick, a couple of programming things, some plugs for myself. NFL.com/Sheck, again, S-H-E-K. A new Sheck report for you reviewing Week 5, plus this Romo apology stuff really has gotten so far under my skin that I felt compelled to break it off from the Sheck report proper and do a special report. I think we called it the reality Sheck.
I liked Sheckstra.
Sheckstra. Ah, where were you when we were naming it? Reality Sheck, though. I gave a reality Sheck to all you Romo apologists out there. Look for that. And also, a new NFL on Thursday Night Football this week. It is the Bears hosting the New York Giants. So it's sort of one that involves both those teams. It's about the backup QBs and the role they've played in some Super Bowl runs or non-Super Bowl runs for those two teams. So much going on at NFL.com/check. All right. The cavalcade of fun for Handsome Hank comes to a crescendo here and now. Look who's walking into Studio 66. Open the door for him, Black Tie. Bring him in. Wide receiver supreme of the Miami Dolphins.
Good to meet you. Good to meet you.
And this is exciting for two people, really, because Handsome Hank, you get to Brian Hartline gets to meet a fan, a supporter. Take a seat. Looking handsome, by the way, may I say. A three-piece suit, checkered gray, a pink tie.
Purple
tie.
Yeah, that's purple.
Accented appropriately.
Ribbon, you know? How about that?
Nice job. What? Wait a second. Right out of the gate. I mean, I don't want to start on the wrong foot, but you're a grown man wearing makeup?
I am. What is that?
I don't know what
gives. First experience ever. Sit down. We're going to touch up. Like, well, this is going to take a while because I know I'm an ugly dude, so fix me up.
Now, you understand this is just a podcast. No one's seeing you. You just felt like feeling pretty to come in here?
Yeah, Handsome Hank was here. I had to make sure I was looking good. Exactly. I didn't want to get beat up.
You know how long I spent in makeup this morning getting ready for this as well.
Look at that.
You both look terrific. Brian Hartline, before we jump into it, how about the juice that the Miami Dolphins have, not just in these United States, but across the big blue marble? This is an Englishman who gravitated to those Dolphins.
It's amazing.
Some years ago.
Twitter gives you that access. It's amazing how many people throughout, I mean, I'm sure a lot of teams get that, but how far the NFL reaches.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is. It really is. You don't realize it. I mean, from South Africa, I'm trying to think, South Africa, the UK, I mean, everything. I mean, I've seen it all on Twitter.
What do you think, Handsome?
Well,
what's your question you have?
I know that they're big in London. We were talking earlier on, like, I saw yesterday as the Raiders were announced as one of the teams that's hosting a game in London next year, and you guys are slated to play the Raiders in 2014. If that all lined up, how would you feel about playing overseas?
I mean, that'd be great. I never had a chance to be over there, either vacation or as a game or anything, so it'd be a great experience. I always wonder how they picked one of the furthest teams away to go all the way over there.
That's a good point.
And I also wanted to ask, too, how did Miami become such a big following over there? Is it because we're so East Coast and so close? Is there a commute from there to Europeans in the Miami area?
Exactly. It's a couple of things. I think it's probably people go on vacation from the UK, let's say, to Florida. They're more likely to go there than, let's say, Pittsburgh. Sorry,
or Oakland.
Exactly.
Or Oakland. I'm going to go check out the U.S. I think I'm going to go to Oakland.
Yeah,
probably not.
So that's one part of it. And then the other part is when football became really big in the U.K., kind of in the mid-early 80s.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was Marino and the Dolphins were flying high, and so I think people wanted to jump on that.
Well, we're going to get them back on.
Absolutely.
Doesn't it seem to you, Brian Hartline, that, I mean, as an American, it seems to me like if you ever go abroad, that Miami is sort of what in their brains, they either think every American is either surfing and out at the ocean or wearing cowboy hats.
I think more cowboy hats.
Yeah, probably.
I bet you they think we're just a bunch of rednecks
Wait,
running
that's
around.
That's not true.
Well, we're only 97% redneck.
Yeah. Everyone's got a redneck in them. They just don't realize it. I'd be lying to say I didn't, so... did not have a suit with cowboy boots on. I guess I'm doing some disjustice here.
I would like to say, listen, I know you've been making the rounds here at NFL Network all day. People can track down all your stuff, and I do want to get through. I want to try to hit some of these big NFL items real quick, though. What do you think of the new uniforms?
I love them.
You like them better than the old?
Yeah, I grew up a Cowboys fan. I had no affiliation to Miami and the logo and whatnot. Walked into it and didn't think anything of it, but... being as where it's at now, I love, one, the colors, because I think the colors before were so dark and just dingy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Now that you look at it. And I love the logo. The last logo to me felt a little cartoony, you know.
But he was playing it safe with the hat.
Except the
hat had an M on it, which means he played for a different team than the Miami
Dolphins.
Understood.
I don't know if he was riding a bicycle. I don't know. So I love it. I enjoy it. I think that the uniforms was definitely an improvement.
Well, you mentioned
the handsome Hank.
I don't know.
We've talked about it. I love it.
You like them better than the old?
Yeah, way.
The shiny turkoise pants were no good.
I think the all white looks
sharp.
I love the face mask.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned you started out as a Cowboys fan.
Yeah.
You know, you're a pro football player, which is pretty cool. Your game ended early. I know, on a sour note. By the way, did you see the Dolphins mascot cheering after the field goal miss at the end of the game?
I think I saw it on a headline about something about the Miami mascot.
Sturgis misses the field goal pretty – I mean, it's a 57-yarder. Right. It's a long shot to try and get. But he misses it, and you look underneath the goalpost, your Dolphins mascot is jumping up and down. Where did he have to go? Did he have somewhere to be?
He's a Dolphin, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe he doesn't know the rules.
Yeah, I don't know. He's from U.K.
I'm telling you, he ain't been right in the head since he took that helmet off.
I think it was Ace Ventura that's still messing him up a little bit.
All right, so you grow up a Cowboys fan. Your game ends early. Then this classic unfolds. Now, I'm from Pittsburgh. I was distracted watching the Pirates and Cardinals play in the NLDS. But most of America was tuned in. Were you, Brian Hartline?
I was grabbing some. I was entertaining still. I still had family in town and all that kind of good stuff. Oh. So it's tough to catch stuff right after the bat. But I was catching highlights. Brother was informing me. How about that? How did people jump on Tony Romo like that?
Well, that's the question.
Know,
you know, we're about
to it. Let's get to it.
So you're pro Romo in this?
Absolutely. This is an NFL league. Go replace Romo and see how your Cowboys do then.
Oh, you know, I don't know if we can line this up because we have one of the great supporters, as I call them, and I guess I count you in this group now too, Romo-pologists. Listen, here's the thing, Brian Hartline. He's dynamite. I have no doubt about that. I'm not diminishing him. People, the straw man argument goes like, well, Tony Romo, you bash him for throwing a bad pick at the end of the game. Well, so he stinks then? No, I didn't say he stinks. Right. I said he throws bad picks at bad times.
Exactly. Here's where you get into problems is because if it's, you know, walks like a duck, smells like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's usually a duck. So my problem is that a lot of, I mean, I think the world of him. I think he's an awesome quarterback. I think I like how he leads his team. I love how he plays the game and he carries, you know, his heart on his sleeve. I get all that and I respect that, but you're right. There's been a trend with fourth quarter kind of debacles at times and it's tough. I mean, no one wants to be around that, but he's just so good. You can't validate getting rid of the guy. I mean, how do you get rid of him? I mean, one, he demands a big contract. You got to pay him or you got to get a new one. And if you got to get rid of him, who's behind him? I don't even know.
Right.
I mean, this league is so thin at quarterback. You're cutting people like Josh Freeman. Are you serious? I mean, I don't think people don't understand what Peyton Manning does to the Denver Broncos. I mean, or you get rid of all the guys up in New England, and then all of a sudden, you know, it was a little rough to start, quote unquote, but you still got Tom Brady. You're fine. You know,
That's right.
It's a quarterback league. And it's hard. You'd be hard pressed to find someone better than Tony Romo.
So I don't think anyone's advocating let's get rid of Tony Romo. I think what they're saying is, if you've got a guy who makes those mistakes at the end of crucial games, like next level from having a quarterback is having a quarterback can take you to the playoffs, take you to the Super Bowl.
That's where being elite.
Is he going to be that guy?
I can't tell you that. I mean, luckily I'm the player. I don't have to make those decisions. But I'm just telling you, from a personnel standpoint, that's a hard person to let go of. And you can't let go of him, and you can't get him off the field. You got to pay him, and you got to live with him. And that's really what it comes down to.
Would you – I mean, we can get into Ryan Tannehill territory now. And, the point is really with Romo, again, 8 years, and the record speaks for itself. And, you know, the Romo apologists always point to the other deficiencies with the Cowboys. You know, as you mentioned, Tom Brady is on a pretty bad roster. I would say that your Dolphins have a deeper roster, and it ain't even close, I don't think, compared to New England. But Tom Brady is gangbusters, and Ryan Tannehill looks like he's headed in that direction. But right now, Brady is carrying that team to 4-1. That's
he deserves that recognition. But you'd be hard pressed to not saying, hey, this defense changed up in New England. So yes, the Tom's still getting the job done. He's helping lead this team, but. You know, I don't know if they'd be 4-1 without that defense. So I would say at this point, the defense was kind of carrying this team for the early start of the season.
What about Braxton Miller, by the way, real quick? I'm jumping all over the place trying to get it all in. Keeping eyes on Columbus?
Yeah, I am. Braxton, I'm very critical, and I try to keep my mouth shut. I hate talking about college players because they don't get paid, so I don't think that it's right to criticize college players. Mm-hmm. But I'm very impressed with the growth of Braxton Miller through this point, fighting through injury, bouncing back from injury, not having a hangover from that injury. And the way his arm has probably progressed is much more improved than I was expecting, personally.
And he looks like a pro-level QB, do you?
And I think when you get guys like – and this is a huge compliment. When you get guys like Russell Wilson playing the way he did out of Wisconsin, obviously starting in NC State and whatnot, but the way – how he's built, how he plays the game – I'd be hard pressed to say he doesn't remind me a little bit of Braxton Miller, Max, of him. So you can go through the league and probably find more guys like that. But that's one guy that jumps out at me.
All right, back to the NFL QB game. Like you say, it's a quarterback league now. I got a little bit of heat a week or so ago because I said we were doing this golden age of young QBs, starting with Cam Newton's year and then going into Russell Wilson, Tannehill, and everybody else. I said Andrew Luck won, And then I put the where it really got dicey was I put Ryan Tannehill ahead of Russell Wilson. I know it's hard for you to do when he's on your team, but how do you sort of categorize where Tannehill ranks among Kaepernick, Newton, RG3, and the rest?
That's hard. I mean, it depends where you want to go with it because in this league.
He's not, and by the way, Tannehill's probably not listening. So speak from the heart.
Yeah. No, it won't come back to bite me at all. honestly, it depends how you want to look at it because if you're playing potential, if you're playing down the road, if you're playing, because you're always judged on how many games you win in the NFL. That's the standard. That's how you win. I don't care about stats. I don't care if you got 1,000-yard receivers. It doesn't matter. Russell Wilson's winning well. Kaepernick of late is having a little bit of struggles, but he's proven last season what he could do. Andrew Luck is doing a great job. Ryan is improving tremendously, and we are still continuing to build around him because the team wasn't quite as ready as those other teams might have been. We're growing. Russell Wilson, again, has won football games. He's earned the respect from being a later draft pick to kind of take the path he's taken. So it's just tough. I think it depends how you're trying to rank them and where you want to go from there.
Let's start with this. I like talking about how fast each guy is. I think Peyton Manning, ironically, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are among the very best, but they would probably finish 31st and 32nd in a foot race among quarterbacks.
Fair enough.
Where does Ryan Tannehill come in against young guys? RG3, Kaepernick, Wilson, the right.
I'm telling you.
A lot of speed. But he's a wide receiver.
Ryan is not a wide receiver. He's a quarterback.
I mean, he was. You know what I'm saying.
He can run, man. I mean, that's one thing that we're beginning to develop more and more into our offense. Where is he ranked? I don't know. I mean, I think he's probably faster than Russell. I don't know for a fact. I bet she's faster than Russell. Kaepernick can run now. He's probably one. I bet she goes Kaepernick, Cam, Ryan, Russell. That'd be my guess.
Luck's quick, though.
Luck's definitely going to be last, though.
No. Yeah, he's
really? He's got wheels.
Nah, I don't know about faster than these guys, though.
How much are you guys talking in the Dolphins locker room about, you know, it's a funny thing because in movies, a big difference between movies and reality, it seems, and we saw that on Hard Knocks a year ago, is that the head coach in the movies is like, fellas, we got to get ourselves together and get out there and run them over and teach them a lesson and give them what for, see? But Philbin is the opposite of that. I mean, it seems like he couldn't be any more low-key. What is it? Is there buzz in that locker room about, like, man, you know, where's a Vince Lombardi-type speech coach?
Okay, so Philbin has his own style, and I respect his style. He's very structured. He always has note cards and note points of where he wants to go with what he's got. Mm-hmm. And anytime we've had a couple of chances, we've had some wins. We've had some close games where we pulled things out, and we get to see the real Coach Philbin. We get to see what his family sees. We get to see the emotion. And I'll tell you what, it's some funny stuff. He's an Irish guy. He had a little Irish jig in there, you know. And, you know, he's using some other moves that probably shouldn't have been moved. But anyways, you know, it's good to see him open up. It's great to see him where he was last year. And when you're coming in as a new head coach, you're so concerned about getting the team ready and being, you know, overanalyzed on what do these guys think of me and how I want to be perceived. And now he's into the point where he's getting his guys on his team. And he's starting to act more like himself. And it's really translating through the team.
The Dolphins of 2013 will not win the AFC East because fill in the blank.
If we don't protect the football. And protecting the football, to me, it also incorporates protecting our quarterback. And we do that by many different things. I mean, whether it's receivers getting open so we get the ball out quicker, you know, backs and, you know, picking up protections or blitzes or the line, making the proper calls. There's the whole offense is in charge of that. But that being said, that is the crucial point. So taking care of the football on offense, it incorporates taking care of the quarterback. That is our number one Achilles heel right now.
When you play the Patriots, because those figure to be two big games coming up for you guys, legitimately, I'm sure I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You win those two games, you maybe you probably
those are big games.
Listen, do you say, but look, listen, sass you can give me, but I'm trying to give you the facts, fella.
Let's do it.
I'm trying to tell you where it's at.
Tell me.
You win these two games. You win the AFC East. Will you, because I assume the rhetoric for an NFL player is just another game, we're going to show up, but will there be in your belly, will there be like, I know I've played big games against Michigan in college and everything, but man, it's Tom Brady. Oh, look, no, it's Bill Belichick. Do you get that way?
Yeah, I'm big in the moment. I don't even think about the past, but honestly, I mean, I really am not thinking past Buffalo. Buffalo's a huge game because every team has played in the divisions. We have not. So, and really in the NFL, division games are worth two. So if we can come out, we can get a win here, and then we turn around and we see New England right away, you're right. There's huge games because, again, they're worth two. And again, we haven't seen, we're 3-2 without seeing a division opponent yet. So that's a huge opportunity for us.
So go ahead, Handsome.
You just mentioned that Joe Philbin showed off some moves that he shouldn't have. Can you talk us through your touchdown dance in week 3?
Oh, yeah. Those are probably moves I probably shouldn't have showed off either.
No, indeed.
I love it. Every time I see it, I freaking crack up, man. That's some funny stuff.
It was a great one.
It was funny stuff. So it's still in the back pocket. I'm working on maybe another one that's pretty funny, too. I don't know which one I'll pull out. It's probably some spontaneity going in there. But overall... me and my brother were hanging out one night. We were having fun, and we both started doing that little dance. And I just said, right there and then, if I get a chance, I'm hitting that on Sunday. And I actually had it ready for the Browns game. Brandon Gibson kind of got to me too quick and wanted to celebrate, and I didn't really want to give him the stiff arm. So I celebrated with him and let it go. And then, again, it came in Atlanta, and I was able to fully expose it.
When that happens, you have to warn your teammates.
Yeah,
by the way, I've got something
now
planned,
I did.
So
yeah.
Just back off.
If you go and you check out the Atlanta game when we scored, Brandon was sitting there waiting for me to finish my dance because he was ready to celebrate. And then I hit it a couple times, and he just jumped me after that, and it was good fun. But we really have a good time with it. Makes the sport what it is, and it still keeps smiles on your faces, and I crack up every time I see it.
All right, last thing real quick for you is, and by the way, what a delight, another one. I can't believe 99% of NFL players prove to be delightful. You know,
really,
I find it remarkable. Huh. Unless we're impossibly lucky with,
I think you. I mean,
everybody who comes in 66 is proven to be a delight.
Let's do it.
Black tie. Tell me one who has. You know who's fantastic. Probably your old pal AJ Hawk. Do you know him?
Yeah, really, he's fantastic, huh?
Oh,
he comes
he's
off
one
so
of our
dry
favorites.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Oh no,
I love it. AJ is a great guy, man.
Oh no, we love him.
Even Greg Schiano when he came in here was pretty good.
Oh, yeah, Schiano. Yeah,
he was.
He brought the whole family.
But his whole family too.
Yeah, he took a swing at me at the end, though. I don't know what that was about. Now listen. Real quick, Mike Wallace.
Yeah.
So he makes his statements a couple of times that are kind of dicey. I want the ball, and it sounds, if you just see a quote, that if from the outside looking in, it's a little, you know, me first. When he comes in the locker room, do you say to him, like, hey, Mike, what was that about? Or is it like, I get where you're coming from kind of thing?
Yeah, no, we don't say a darn thing. I think, you know, I understand where he's coming from. You know, really, I think the one we're talking about is even the game one when he didn't see the ball as probably as much as he wanted to. We won the game. It was fine. Huge stress. Same division he used to play in. Same guy used to go against him. Really felt like a lot of weight was on his shoulders. And I don't blame him. And honestly, him saying, talk to the coach, nothing to say, talk to the coach, you know, however you put it off, awesome way to handle it. Because I've been there. There's one time I got frustrated. I caught myself. I learned from it. And it's fine. It turned into a learning experience. But the way he handled it was excellent. He, you know, deferred everything to the coach. He was frustrated, didn't want to say anything. And easiest way to do it. And he did a great job, too. Because it's a lot harder to say, talk to the coach, than it is to say what you're really thinking. So, stellar, man. He killed it.
All right, cool. Great stuff. I enjoyed meeting him. Not as much as Handsome Hank did.
Handsome Hank.
January is looming. The holiday season hasn't arrived yet, but on the other side of that, Brian Hartline, it could be a big January 2014 for you. You'll watch your Buckeyes maybe play in the national championship, then you'll play in some playoff games.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yep. Exciting.
Good.
It's an exciting time. And now we have cause to root for you.
I appreciate it, man.
Brian Hartline.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks
I
for
think
paying
we
a visit.
We already had cause to root for you.
No, I like black and gold, but I do need a new team to finish out 2013.
Yeah,
it's not
year.
Good. All right, Brian Hartline. Get out of here. Go have fun on
TV
today.
Next. Appreciate it, guys.
Dave. Dee-da-da-da-da-da-don't. Dave.
All right. So he's gone, Handsome. How did you feel about that?
It was what a thrill to speak to Brian Hartline.
It was neat.
It was very
neat.
But
more importantly, do you still have your game face on?
I think in a way he's galvanized me against Tony Romo. I'm kind of disappointed. Brian Hartline's one of my sort of two or three favorite Dolphins, but went down a little bit in my estimation with his Romo apologist.
No. Well, bring him in. Bring him in, black tie. Hold him at the door for 1 second. He went challenged on it.
Yeah,
he initially said, yeah, I'm on Romo's side. And then I said, well, but what about those picks that he throws at the end of big games? And he said, well, yeah, I mean, you can't really do. Yeah, I mean, that's true.
And that's exactly where Elliot Harrison's going as well.
All right. Here they are, everybody. The Romo apologists from Cincinnati, Ohio, and from Dallas, Texas. It's Chris Wessling and Elliot
Harrison! And in the other corner, all the way from across the Atlantic Ocean, he hails from London, England, it's Handsome Hank! And me. I thought it was important to bring in you, Chris Wessling. How are you, by the way?
I'm a little out of breath. I just got done chasing chickens and running up a flight of steps.
That was me making a joke about like how I'm like Rocky Balboa. You ever seen that picture? We got that in my hometown. We got right in downtown. Everybody turned out. Everybody went out to see Rocky II when it came into the theaters. All right, Wessling. I like that you're from south of the Mason-Dixon line because you are going to be pro-Romo here.
Cincinnati's north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Is that right?
Yes.
I guess that makes
it
sense.
Straddles it.
Would be. But then again, people call it Cincitucky. Is that what they call it?
Cincitucky. Hamiltucky is another. Yeah, there's all kinds
I've been there. You know what I've said about Cincinnati more than once? It's the poor man's Pittsburgh.
It's so close to Kentucky that I delivered mail in Covington, Kentucky while I lived in Cincinnati.
Yeah, we had the mail. I would get on the back of my steed, and I'd ride across the river. Walk right through it. Kept me up on high, you know. Didn't get so much as my shoes wet if I had shoes on, which I didn't. All right. Now, here he is, the main man, a man who has taken a good deal of Twitter abuse. Really, first of all, it would have been left alone. And everybody would have been, yes, Elliot Harrison, you're right. But one Handsome Hank decided to respond. And it felt to me like the unwashed masses were on Handsome side, on my side. But then the highbrow insiders like Elliot and Chris Wessling says, you don't understand football if you don't see how great Tony Romo is. Here he is, everybody. It's Elliot Harrison. How are we, sir?
I'm so glad I came on.
I just put you in the category of of the people who know it better than the rest of us.
Well, Chris, I wanted to respond to Cincinnati, you know, no longer being south of Mason-Dixon line because that ain't us out there no more. We changed it to regular people.
If I can change and you can change, we all can change. That's what Balboa tells the Soviet crowd gathered to watch him defeat Drago. And I hope, fellas, that at the end of this, we can be like Balboa and Gorbachev and applaud one another's efforts. Amen. Now, let's get into it. Elliot, you watched on Sunday a terrific game. Like I just told Heartline, I was unable to see it. I was busy watching the Pirates and Cardinals in the NLDS. But the mass.
Yeah, but why don't you lay out what you have in your check report? Why don't you lay out your.
I've done it. I've already done it, but I'll say it again. Yes, I think Tony Romo is dynamite. I think, again, he makes plays that very few quarterbacks in the NFL now or possibly even forever. He's Staubachian for Cowboys fans in his ability to dodge would-be tacklers on the wrong side of the line. He slings it downfield. He makes. Now I almost just fell into some cheap rhetoric about how he makes the guys around him better. He doesn't because they go 8-8 every year. So I don't know that he does make anybody better. And so one point is, yes, he is terrific. But it is also not my imagination that he has thrown some really bad interceptions in some really big spots. That is not an illusion. And there's no way to argue around that fact. That he is very productive, except when the game is on the line. And this idea, well, he doesn't have any help around him. First of all, he does have help around him. He has Dez Bryant and Jason Witten. Jason Witten's going to the Hall of Fame. If Dez Bryant continues to go the way he is, even if he just maintains his current level, he's no worse than the third best receiver in the NFL. Those are his two guys who he gets to throw to. They do have a running game with DeMarco Murray now. That offensive line, statistically at least, Chris Wessling is playing better than we expected this year. And while the defense is shoddy, you know who else had a bad defensive effort on Sunday? Peyton Manning. He still won the game. He didn't turn the ball over.
False. He turned the ball over late in the second half.
Right, but he didn't turn the ball over and cost them the game. His turnover wasn't the thing that resulted in the final 3 points being scored.
No, it resulted in points, though. And they all counted on Sunday.
I agree. But at that time that Tony Romo had his unfortunate turnover, what was the score?
Hank.
What was the score at the time of that turnover?
It was 48-48.
And where did the turnover take place?
It took place around the 20-something yard line.
And how much time was left?
2 minutes. It was north of the 2-minute warning. So I'm glad you're there. No, let's just stay right with that. We'll not even get into Tony Romo. We'll just talk about football, okay?
All right.
It's 2nd and 16. Why is it 2nd and 16? Because there's a holding penalty on Dwayne Harris's kickoff return, okay? Mm-hmm. 2nd and 16. Let's say that Romo throws that ball away, rolls out. He sees that Escobar's got a linebacker cutting in front of him, which, by the way, brilliant play by Trevathan.
I agree with you. Although it was triple coverage, too. His eyeballs should have told him that's a bad spot.
How many linebackers drop balls right in their hands? That guy lunged. It was a great play, and I don't think he's received enough credit, but I know that we're not here to talk about him.
No. Okay.
I think we all agree. I don't think anyone's here saying that it was an average play.
No.
But Romo shouldn't have tried to jam that ball in there with three defenders in the air.
And Tony Romo admitted that the ball placement, he wasn't happy with. It wasn't where he wanted the ball to be.
So let's say he throws the ball out of bounds. He was out of the pocket. He rolled out to his right. Chris, am I saying anything that you watch the game, right?
Yeah.
He's on track here. So he throws the ball out 3rd and 16.
Well, he didn't actually need to throw it out of bounds because DeMarco Murray was open.
Okay, but, you know, people sometimes need to tap the brake on that. Quarterbacks can't see every single receiver at every moment of a play. You focus on one guy, then another guy, then another guy.
He also tripped over his offensive lineman's foot.
Okay. Right. So, look, I mean, that happens. Steve Young.
Yeah, I'm saying you're going to see even less when you're falling because you tripped over somebody's foot.
Right, but I don't want to excuse Romo for being unathletic there. Okay, so let's just say for argument, he throws it out of bounds. It's 3rd and 16. Dallas probably doesn't – most of the time you don't pick up 3rd and 16. It is probably a less than 15% probability in the NFL, okay? Dallas punts, Denver returns probably – to its own 45, if they get a good return to Dallas's 45. Is there any way that Dallas's defense stops Peyton Manning in that scenario? Dallas punts, Denver gets the ball at their own 45. Anyway.
I mean, who knows? Peyton throws interceptions at big moments as well.
Dallas could not stop them too. Almost the whole game, Dallas could not stop them. Secondly, is there any chance that Peyton Manning leaves any time on the clock for Romo to come back? No. Because he's going to call no Sean Marino runs, and they're going to kick. And by the way, Prater's got a huge leg. Prater can kick from 50. He beat the Bears with 250-something-yard field goals 2 years ago. They're going to win the game anyway.
But listen, I understand the premise you're laying out, which assumes, and by the way, it does assume, you're right that 3rd and 16, if he doesn't dump the ball off or tuck it and try to run and pick up 5 yards himself and make
it
more manageable. Okay, but let's say it's 3rd and 16, but, you know, I can also create scenarios in which it's a little bit, it's more manageable in third down. But okay, 3rd and 16, now he's going to try to pick it up. And he doesn't do it. Now they have to punt the ball and do it. Isn't that better? Aren't those odds way better than Tony Romo trying to squeeze another ball in that he shouldn't, an ill-advised pass, especially given his track record? And by the way, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. This isn't, let's say, I'm trying to think of somebody who is neither clutch nor a choker, labeled either one, you know, because I think those titles get to be tough on somebody and they become one or the other and it's unfair. So who is a guy who's sort of in the middle of that? Aaron Rodgers kind of thing, I guess, possibly? Is that he's not, nobody says that, man, that's the guy you want under center. I mean, nobody says, look at what he's done. He always is pulling off those last minute comebacks. Roethlisberger has that swagger. Eli has that kind of thing with, you know, around him more. This is not in a vacuum. Tony Romo has a number of these bad picks there. So it should be in his head, don't turn the ball over.
Right.
You cannot give this game away. And yes, you have a lot on your shoulders, Tony, but don't be the guy to turn the ball over.
And even
here,
if it's not in his head, because actually I'd prefer a quarterback if it wasn't in his head, because that's, you don't want it in his head. But the reason that people label him this is because it's happened before. Like, And if you get a reputation for something, you've got a reputation justifiably. That's why after the game, people, including myself, are saying Tony Romo did it again.
Tony Romo looked a lot like Tony Romo today. He was dynamite for 58 minutes, and then he wasn't for the last 2 minutes. That's basically what it boils down to.
And not just dynamite. He outplayed Peyton Manning, who I think we could all make an argument is playing the best five-game stretch of any quarterback, maybe in history, certainly in the NFL right now. He outplayed him for 58 minutes.
Make him beat you, in other words. So it's acceptable that he did it because, well, we would have lost anyway, so he may as well throw an ill-advised ball on our side of the field. Yes, Wes.
You know what the problem is with this bout right here?
we're all reasonable. And this whole thing is about people who are unreasonable on both sides. Romo has become a divisive figure like a Tim Tebow or a Pete Rose or a Bob Knight, where when you're in the argument, you're going to side against the person who's the most unreasonable. You got upset because of what one national writer said on Twitter.
Who, me? Prisco of CBS said, if you bash Romo, the quote was that really fired me up, is if you bash Romo after this game, you're an idiot.
That's why the four of us are
Peter
in
King,
here right now.
Then Peter King retweets it, and Elliot retweets it, and Adam Schein writes a screed about you don't get football if you bash Romo. It's like, well, listen, if I've been watching football the last 7 years, one major takeaway would be that Tony Romo is fantastic, except when the game's on the line. That just is the reality of it. I know you're going to throw out his quarterback rating in the fourth quarter.
It doesn't matter.
Equal wins and losses.
Wins and losses are what counts.
He throws the games away in big moments. Listen, Wes, I'm trying to think of your team. Oh, yes. Okay, so you're a Cincy guy. And now you like... you don't like the Bengals anymore. They're not. I guess it's a baseball comparison. How about it? Let's look at it this way. Until 2004, at least, the Red Sox were, their history was devastating losses, really good, and then crushing losses in October again and again, and having to survive those things as a fan. On the other hand, just a little bit, a little bit towards the Midwest there, Chicago Cubs. They just were never in it. It wasn't crushing losses. By June, let's go out and sit in the sun and drink beer because this team stinks as usual. I guess philosophically, the question is, because the straw man argument I refer to is, so you think he stinks? So Romo stinks? He's as bad as Mark Sanchez? You think? No, I didn't say that. No, that's the... the vexing thing about Tony Romo is that he's not Mark Sanchez level bad. The point is, he is the Boston Red Sox pre-2004. Yes, he's good. He always has you in the mix. He's dynamite. And I did it again. He broke my heart again. I can't take it. I'd rather just have Mark Sanchez be like, yeah, we got a bum. That's it.
And that's what Brian Hartline said as a Cowboys fan. He was saying, what, you want to get rid of Romo? No, absolutely not. You want a guy who's going to get you to the brink of these big games. But the next level, because it's difficult to find a franchise quarterback in the NFL. But the next level is, I want someone who's going to win me playoff games, ultimately win me a Super Bowl. And I can't be convinced Romo is that guy.
There's so much more to it than that. I mean, first of all, if Kyle Orton came in, the Cowboys would not lose.
I'm certainly not saying that's a good idea.
Hang on. The Romo apologists say that if...
Romo apologists,
sorry.
Well, you could just say we.
All right. That if Kyle Orton came in, we would lose 50-20. I disagree. They would lose 27-20 because the Dallas defense would know they got to play their butt off, and they'd be more motivated to play their butt off because they know they've got a spare in there. And we can't just sit there. But when you have a quarterback like that, look what's going on with Denver's defense. Sometimes you just don't play as hard. That's why when Kyle Orton came in for the Bears as a rookie, their defense played lights out that year. Lights out. So that Kyle Orton didn't have to do anything. But that didn't mean that Kyle Orton was playing well. And I want to make an analogy for you. You talked about how the percentages were better if they would have punted. I agree with you. But let's put you into Tony Romo's head for a second. Let's say hypothetically, you ever did a TV or internet segment with someone who really wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And you really
hypothetically.
Felt like, hypothetically. And you had to take over that segment, hypothetically. Okay? And after seeing that person hypothetically screw up time and again, or stammer, or whatever, you would hypothetically jump in more aggressively and try to come up with a witty comment to cover for both of you, right?
All right.
Right. So maybe you do it a few times and you do it successfully, but then you get in this habit because you're so used to having to do that, that now you stammer because you were trying to think of something witty to say, right, on live
TV,
and it bombed. Hold on. Don't say anything.
I'm listening to you.
Don't talk. That's what Tony Romo's doing on the sideline with that sweaty baseball cap, watching his defense chase Eric Decker, watching thinking, dude, I got to score here. We don't score here, we lose. Period. I got to make a play. I challenge you and Hank right now. And Chris, you jump in on this. I want you guys to tell me the choke Romo moments that you know in your brain right off the top of your head. Right now.
In Heinz Field, 2008, okay. Early December, two minutes left in the game. Steelers tie it. They kick the ball off.
Yep.
Romo throws a miserable ball. Throws a miserable ball.
Absolutely. You had me at hello. Keep in mind that was the best defense in the league by far.
Redskins at the end of last season.
But
it was also Willie Williams who picked them off.
Yeah, but that was come on. That 08 Steelers defense was phenomenal.
Redskins at the end of last season.
Absolutely. Agreed. Okay, Chris, can you remember any?
Bears game, Monday Night Football last year?
That wasn't a choke game. I mean, they just got blown out. I mean, the whole team played horrible.
Oh, it seemed like he had a series.
There was a Jets game at the beginning of last year.
There you go. Jets threw the interception to Revis. Okay, so that's three games right there. The
Giants.
Steelers.
Was it the season finale 2 years ago?
Yeah.
They missed an open Miles Austin.
That's Miles. Okay, I'll give you that. But Romo drove the Cowboys down the field to win that game, and JPP blocked the field goal. I mean, how can you put that on Tony Romo? You know? I mean, you guys remember this game.
Of course I do.
I mean, you blame, just like you wouldn't blame Matt Ryan the other night because he got the Falcons in position, right?
Right.
And then Geno Smith came back. That's not Matt Ryan's fault. But we've got three legit ones right there. Let's go ahead and throw the Seahawks one in the bag, too, just for fun, the drop.
I wouldn't want to include that.
Okay.
Because it's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Tony Romo throwing picks at the end of game.
Right. So this is where it gets ridiculous.
Although
right
we're being naive to say that that doesn't somehow inform
potentially,
the chip he has on his shoulder as he goes forward. Okay. That's the first of many misdeeds.
All right. So I've got us down for four right here that come off the top of y'all's heads.
But you must have more, right? You're a Cowboys fan with a incredible memory for football.
I can think of a couple of games where he really screwed up. Okay. All right. Now. What do you always hear on Twitter or social media or even our own network? He screws up. I'm starting to act like you when you mimic people. He screws up in the biggest games at the end of the game. Oh, really? The biggest games. I'm sorry, but isn't Denver week five? Funny how the Denver game week five is the biggest game of the season.
Wait a second. This is an undefeated team in the midst of a historic offensive run. This is
and there's a reason the Cowboys end up finishing 8-8, 9-7 because it doesn't matter what week it is.
They all count. Kind of like Peyton Manning's interception in the fourth quarter. They all count. Agreed.
Wait, you're saying that very definitively. I don't know what point you just made.
You're being a hypocrite. You're saying that Peyton Manning's early fourth quarter interception didn't matter because Romo's came with 2 minutes to go. Did he not say this, Chris?
He did say that.
So now you're saying a week five game counts. It's analogous to one another.
Well, it is, but it's not the same.
Okay. All right.
It's not what I said.
Peyton really does his best work in terms of
in January.
Crucial, devastating picks come playoff time. Okay. That's another
Dave,
matter.
Your point. Your point
we
about,
have a couple months till
hey,
then.
Your point about the Pittsburgh game, it was an early December game. I remember that game very well. Dallas was leading 13-3 in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Okay. All right. Now, Tony Romo last year had two fourth quarter comebacks in December. One was against the Cincinnati Bengals when they had nobody healthy. They came back and won on a field goal. That was a comeback win. Tony Romo had four fourth quarter comebacks last year, which was tied for the NFC lead. But here's the deal. When Tony Romo does that, it's not the lead highlight.
Oh, it is so.
It is
that
not.
Is such nonsense.
It is
that,
not.
That somehow poor martyr Tony Romo and all of his Romo apologists, that Romo gets no praise. You know,
why
here's
is that
what,
not part of the narrative?
Here's
nobody
what,
ever talks about his comeback
don't think
victory.
Tony,
they don't.
Nobody
they
ever
don't.
Talks about his comeback victory.
They don't.
Oh, that is
that's
just
not
such
true. That's
just
not
rubbish
true.
To say
it's just
that.
Part of the narrative. It doesn't make as big a noise as what he just did.
Here's the thing. Let me just say this,
why can't y'all just admit that maybe some of this is personal?
But it's funny because I swear the next thing that was going to come out of my mouth is, and I don't mean to, I'm not saying you are Elliot Harrison narcissistic. I am saying the Romopology involves an element of narcissism to think that someone objective, I'm not objective about the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't hate any teams, including the Baltimore Ravens or Cleveland Browns or anyone else. I have no visceral feeling for their success or failure. I do. It hurts me when the Steelers lose. It pleases me when they win.
Hank hates the Jags.
Now listen. True.
Why would I hate the
those
Jags?
Are his Florida roots.
I just don't
out.
Think about them.
Listen, I get no pleasure or sorrow from what Tony Romo does. The assumption that I do, what axe do I have to grind with that right. guy? I couldn't care
Actually,
less what
you
he
know
does.
What? As a Dolphins fan, at the end of that game, I'm going to put myself in the hated Mercury Morris bracket. I wanted the Cowboys to win that game.
But now here's the other side of that of that sort of martyrdom slash narcissism that seems to come out quite a bit is. Poor Tony. I mean, but he's perpetually behind the eight ball before the game even kicks off.
Wait a minute.
Because he has no one around him.
I don't feel sorry for him. The guy makes $109 million.
All right, but you understand. I mean, in football terms.
Chris.
I'm talking about he's not surrounded by talent.
So let's ask Chris.
And how can we, if you put Tony Romo on the Bengals, they'd be undefeated. Listen, he is on a team that has some seasons had a lot of talent. Other seasons, they've been talent poor. This year, Tom Brady's team is talent poor. They're 4-1. You know, Brian Hartline points out that defense has improved. Yes, it is. Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers played behind not mediocre offensive lines when they won their Super Bowls, their most recent Super Bowls. They were behind bottom 10 in the league offensive lines.
The number
they
one
still won Super Bowls.
Wait a minute. The Packers had the number one defense in 2010.
All right.
In terms of takeaways, like the Packers
I'm saying this. Over 8 years, you mean for me to believe that they are just such a perpetual messed up organization that the only thing they got right was Tony Romo and everything else has failed and he's always got poor Tony. How's he going to pull up this sad sack of players?
You're doing right now what you accuse Romo apologists of doing. You're speaking in these grand gestures. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that Tony Romo is just under the elite level quarterback. I think Tony Romo is the seventh best quarterback in the NFL. That's how I honestly feel right now, today. And I could give you my top six if you want
to hear. I'd love to hear that. I would
put him sixth through the first five games this year. He's the sixth best quarterback in the NFL five games this year.
I just mean overall, for me, he's number seven, okay? What keeps him from being elite is exactly what you guys are talking about. What I don't like is people, like you guys sometimes, sitting on social media at work or whatever, waiting for him to screw up and then tweeting about it. Like, we don't wait for Rashard Mendenhall to dance behind the line like he's done 500 million more times than Romo's own interceptions, but we don't tweet about that.
It's a quarterback league. It's all the rhetoric. It's a quarterback league. The quarterbacks are the biggest stars.
And
they get all the credit. They get all the blame. Is it fair? No, but that works that way for every team. Same thing as Peyton Manning throwing that terrible pick. This idea that, well, why doesn't Peyton Manning get abused? He does get abused. It was his fault that they didn't beat the Ravens last year
in
the playoffs.
In a Super Bowl as well. I mean, the first time that Romo did this.
Is it Raheem Morris' fault or is it Manning's?
It's Manning's. Waiting like, oh, great, Tony Romo screwed up. But when you do it two times, three times, four times, inevitably
people
are going
to do it. Ben Roethlisberger wins his first Super Bowl. All you've ever heard about that is that nobody talks about the defense was really good and Alan Faneca was devastating on that one. When he pulled, that was the difference maker in that game, is that he freed up fast Willie Parker to bust that long run and that opened the game up. All you ever hear is, well, Ben Roethlisberger stunk and didn't deserve that Super Bowl. That's not like a crap. Yeah. That's all anybody talks about.
I'm going to go back to my point before. It's all perception. And when we're dealing with the lunatic fringe, you've obviously dealt with a lunatic fringe who makes apologies for offensive lines and surrounding talent. I don't hear that. No one ever makes apologies about Tony Romo to me. What I hear about is the same thing Elliot says. You're sitting there on social media waiting to jump on this guy as soon as he makes a mistake. That's what I've noticed, and that's why I'm here today.
And here it is.
Right.
Ellipses.
All right, we'll wrap it up with this. We'll wrap it up with this question for Wes and for Elliot. This is now seen. Then the argument kind of moves around. It is, again, the straw man argument. Then when you go historic, it becomes so by that sort of logic that he hasn't won the big one. So that makes him bad. No, it doesn't make him bad. It just doesn't make him legendary. And if you want him to be legendary and great and iconic and a possible Hall of Famer and all that, then he has to come through in the big games at some point in his career. That's just the way it is. He can't be. Is he great or is he not great? That's really the question. And that's what I throw at you. I'll start with you, Wes. Is he great or not?
He's not great. He's a very good quarterback, and he'll become great. I think all four of us agree on this. If he wins in the playoffs, then he gets a pass like Peyton Manning has.
Of course, yeah. Yes. Do it pass. Once. If you were the starting quarterback for 8 years and you're great, then at some point there's going to be some run where you get hot like Joe Flacco did. I don't think Joe Flacco is great. He has been good in the playoffs, to be fair. But is he great week in and week out? No.
If I had to take the field tomorrow.
But he got hot for that one. You got to do that if you want to be held up. If you want to hold him up as great. Then he's got to come through and be great when it is important to be great.
If I had to take the field tomorrow, I would take Romo over Joe Flacco and Eli Manning, and they have rings.
Pretty interesting.
I think that's fair. I you asked for my ranking of quarterbacks. I'll just give it to you right now. I've got one Manning. I've got two Brady.
Come on. Both those guys ahead of Aaron Rodgers?
I've got tied for three Breeze and Rodgers. I'm just telling you my
All
list,
right,
dude.
I'm listening to it. Well, I don't want to get into that argument, but I can't believe there are two guys ahead of Rodgers.
I wrote this in my power rankings. I'm getting killed for it right now. I wrote Roethlisberger 5, and everyone's all over me about that. They're like, he's so much worse than that. He's terrible. I'm serious.
That's crazy. That's fair.
I got Luck 6, based on partially on potential, and I have Romo 7. That's how I've got it. Over Ryan, over Flacco, over Eli, not over Luck. That's how you have it. And I just want to say one more thing, and I'm going to shut up. You're a big Dolphins fan. You love Dan Marino, right? This is not the typical argument that about Marino not having rings. I don't care that Romo's a Cowboy. There's tons of Cowboys like Anthony Spencer that have hurt that team. They've been inconsistent. You know, I can go on and on and on. I only got this fired up about any sports argument when people used to say that John Elway was so much better than Dan Marino. I was like, what games are you watching?
I'm on your side on this
one,
too.
Because John Elway had all these comebacks because he threw three interceptions in the second quarter.
Right.
Dan Marino didn't have to overcome himself. But Marino didn't have the rings, and once Elway got the two rings, which he would have never gotten without Terrell Davis.
Without
the
talent that he had surrounding
him. Everybody agrees
that. So to me, Romo is the same thing. It's just this dumb, stupid thing we all subscribe
to. Careful. You're sliding into putting – you're sliding into – it's the same thing as Romo off of a Marino thing.
It's just – to me, it's not all about
– Is he a Hall of Famer?
I think right now, Romo is a Hall of Very Gooder, and he's very close to Hall of Fame.
He's in the Donovan McNabb category.
Better than Donovan McNabb.
Yeah, I would disagree with that.
You would disagree? What about you?
I would disagree as well because Donovan McNabb kept going to the playoffs, kept going to the NFC Championship games
to the championship.
You know what? I will say this: there was a point where McNabb was phenomenal. It's just his decline happened sooner.
Yes, you know, and it happened quickly.
And
as
it
well.
Happened very quickly. But his crescendo, like 2001, outstanding. Dave,
all right,
McNabb
Dan?
Or Romo.
I would take Romo.
Romo?
Romo okay. by a whisker, but it does...
A good argument.
It's, again, I'll tell you, though, that McNabb for me is... I often talk about the Rolling Stone syndrome, which is what's happened most recently has sort of covered up the early stuff. They're, you know, the Rolling Stones made wonderful records, but in the last 20 years, they've been all junk. And now people think, if you ask some kid on the street, what about the Rolling Stones? They'd be like, oh, those old losers, their music sucks. Yeah, well, go and they'll look up, you know, find their good records, and then you'll think differently. McNabb early was great. Yep. He just got fat and couldn't move around anymore, and that was the key to his game.
The McNabb-Romo thing is kind of similar to what you would say about active quarterbacks. Romo has been steadily productive and never really has had an awful season. And then you compare him to guys like Rivers and Eli Manning, who have had some brutal seasons.
Yep.
But
Eli doesn't get blamed for it.
You've got that up and down with Eli and Rivers, where Romo just is good every year.
I don't
think
Rivers has got the pass. Rivers in the last 2 years has not got a pass. Eli Manning has two Super Bowl rings.
And let me just tell you, and then this will be my last point, and I think we can wrap it up. I don't want it to get to veer into too much redundancy here. But, you know, Flacco was never on a level that anybody would throw slings and arrows at him because nobody looked at Joe Flacco as the Romo is put into a certain category because statistically he's very productive. So Joe Flacco was never that until January, this past January. Now that he's getting paid $20-some million, I'll tell you, until they won these games now, they go down to Miami and win a big game there. But there was starting to get to be some momentum behind, whoa, Joe Flacco, man, why'd they invest so much money? It's corrupted the team. He's not worth that kind of money. You start getting into that kind of dollar range and the team is to some degree built around you, you are then expected to be productive all the time or you will be torn to shreds. Witness, in Pittsburgh, half that city would trade Ben Roethlisberger right now. I mean, all the yinzers out there are talking about, like, yeah, Roethlisberger's done, dude. We got to trade him to Houston. Get a couple first-rounders for him. It's like, what? What are you talking about? He's 31. He's not trading Ben Roethlisberger. Eli Manning's abused. Peyton Manning, as we just talked about in the last 15 minutes, gets abused. Tom Brady this season was getting some abuse. He won 3 rings for those people up there. Everybody, it's the position. This idea, why are people attacking Tony Romo? Because every quarterback who's considered good gets abused. That's the point. Period. No one wants it to happen. Or does it? Well, I mean, I'm sure there are some haters out there, Redskins, Eagles, Giants fans, or people in Texas who hate the Cowboys. I'm sure they do root against Romo. I'm not that. I don't care. I'm just pointing out. I'm reacting to the preponderance of evidence.
Did we decide on reality check or Shextra? Because I have one bullsheck.
That doesn't deserve your laughter. But you know what? Congratulations.
That's put us together, Elliot.
All right. You know what? I say ding, ding, ding. The fight is over. Let's, you know what? Just to do it, because this is a sports show and people like winners and losers in sports. Let's go to the judge. Only one man was keeping score. That's Black Tie Behind the Glass. Go ahead.
Guys, I got to go with the Romo apologist on this one, because as Westling said, we're reasonable people here. It doesn't have to be one or the other. He's a very productive.
That's
very
what
positive.
I said. Listening? What do you mean? That's
were you
what?
Listening to any of this?
Well, not really, actually. It went too long. But either way, I just prefer Westling's and Harrison's arguments.
I wonder.
You heard one thing.
I can't believe that your nominal boss, Handsome Hank, and the person whose name is on this podcast is the one who you just cast your vote against. Some people would say that's integrity. I say it's jive, and you better be careful with yourself. I don't like that. Where's your bread buttered, Black Tie? Is Elliot or Chris Westling? What do they have to do with you? This is your boss, Handsome Hank. What do you have to say about this, Handsome?
It's all right. I'd like to know what body language analysis is anyway. I think that's more important about this.
Oh, speaking of, I could give a quick rundown. The reason Romo gets a lot of hate is because he does show.
Oh, he's going to clear it all up for us.
It's because he does show that his mistakes hurt him. You could see after the pick, you can see in the post-game presser. If he was more like Eli, who honestly looks like he doesn't care sometimes, it's like happy-go-lucky.
I'm sure people
wouldn't
Dallas
care
would,
as much.
People in Dallas would forgive him.
I don't understand what that point means.
At the end of the game,
Tony Romo
mind.
Gets a lot of heat because he actually shows that he cares.
Cam Newton does too, and he gets a lot of heat.
Cam Newton pouts. That's
exactly.
There's a difference.
There's a big difference.
Tony Romo is a Shakespearean tragic figure. Right. He's a beautiful loser.
All right. I think this was fun. I don't think it got too heated. I hope everybody feels okay now afterwards. Elliot and Handsome, would you like to say anything to each other?
I'm sorry, I yelled at you yesterday. Wait a minute. That brings up my favorite segment of DDFP. Has Black Tie seen that movie? That was Naked Gun, right?
Oh,
you remember when Kurt Gowdy goes up? Sorry, I yelled at you yesterday. The broadcaster. You remember
all
that?
All right, let's take a quick. In case you're not familiar with the segment, Black Tie has seen no movie that was created prior to 2006.
Prior to 1992.
No. And he's seen about 4 movies since then.
That's not true.
But anything that existed before that is almost
before 92, yeah.
Absolute guarantee that he has not seen it. That's right about when Naked Gun came out. I would say probably
late 80s.
No, it was late 80s.
Late 80s.
Yeah, like 88, I should think.
I'm going to say no. I'm on a 1-game losing streak. I'm usually great at this game too, but not a shot.
I actually would go as far as I don't think he may have even heard of it. I'm not kidding.
I'm the bizarro Black Tie. I haven't seen any movies since the mid-90s. I'm going to say if I've seen it, he probably hasn't.
Right.
So he
all
has
right.
not seen Naked Gun.
I'm going to – what's a – not a trifecta. What is it when it's 4?
A quadfecta.
Is it a quadfecta?
Well, you can go with it.
Quadfecta. I'm going to say you have not seen Naked Gun. More than 2 minutes of it.
So we're all right.
Too easy.
The buzz. Yeah, it's really. As long as you say he hasn't seen it, you're gonna feel good about yourself.
Have you heard of that?
Of course,
have you heard of that movie?
Of course, I've heard Naked Gun. You guys need to do movies more so in the 95 range, 96, 97.
Okay,
and then we can get into business.
Let me just ask, because I don't want it to be anticlimactic. Have we done Rocky IV before? On this show?
We've done Rocky 1 and 2.
Okay, then let's do Rocky 4 since it came up in our conversation here.
Rocky 4, no, I have not seen Rocky 4.
We were just trying to play the game!
too late. I have not seen Rocky 4, and I don't intend to, really. It's just, at some point, you got to stop. I stop after 3.
Did you see 3?
Half of it. A little bit.
So you've watched half of
Rocky. Well,
Rocky.
I didn't sit down
Rocky
and watch
one
it.
And
I've
a half.
Seen it.
You didn't need to see how Balboa. So you left off.
Which
where
half?
You leave off, Mickey is dead.
I have
Mickey
explained.
Mickey dies and Balboa loses the belt. Well,
I've
that's the end of the movie for
explained.
Me.
I've explained. I dislike sports movies. It's just something.
And Tom Cruise movies.
The body language doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah, it's just rather cliche. You know how things are usually going to end up. It doesn't do it for me.
I'd like to make a unique prediction. I want to tell y'all where I think that TD left off in Rocky 3. Right when Mr. T shows up at the press conference with the rawhide jacket on and says, Hey, woman. Look at this bum fighting other bums. Won't you give me
come
a chance?
Come on over here. Be a real man. That is awesome.
All right, enough movie talk. That is a movie I've seen a ton of times, actually, about 5 times. But, guys, can we get some picks?
Fine. Why did you see Inception 5 times, but you haven't seen any classic
You
once?
Could have used those 2 hours
I've never
each
heard
time.
Of Inception.
You could have used.
What was our last movie? It was 48 Hours, right?
Yep.
Chris, did you see 48 Hours?
I have seen 48 Hours.
Okay.
Have you seen Black Tie? Have you seen Trading Places?
No way. No mm-hmm. way.
Coming to America.
Of course I've seen Coming to
America. You cannot say of course to any movie. the number of movies you haven't
that
seen.
Was, I honestly didn't sit down and watch it. It was just something my oldest sisters were watching because I was the youngest growing
it's
up.
It's the equivalent. It's like, oh, that was a tight game the Cowboys were in. Did they win? Of course they won. Tony Romo was under center. Same level of response. Makes no sense.
I never really loved
nice
it, though.
I thought we buried the hatchet.
All right. Yeah, we did bury the hatchet. Okay. All right. Wes, thank you for stopping by. We appreciate it every time we see you. Around the League, find his pages at NFL.com. Find his podcast along with his pals, Greg Rosenthal, Dan Hanzus, Mark Sessler. Boy, I was remiss, Black Tie. We should have gotten Hanzus because his Jets are flying high, and they host my Pittsburgh Steelers. I'd love to hear what he thinks.
I'm honestly thinking we might need to do a part two here, guys. We need to get the picks.
We need to get
Cameron Jordan. We have a lot going on.
Oh, yeah. We got Cameron Jordan of the Saints coming up.
We got a lot going on.
We got to talk to him about if he gets confused about whether he's Cameron Jordan.
I didn't
Jordan
even know
Cameron.
Who it is anymore. Is it Jordan Cameron? Or,
I don't know.
Figured out how to tell them apart? Cameron Jordan is Steve Jordan's son, the old Vikings tight
end. That's right. Yeah.
So that's the only reason I can ever tell
But then
tell
there's
them
also
apart.
Cameron Hayward. And
he's
Jordan Cameron Jordan plays in New Orleans. And Cameron Hayward plays in Pittsburgh, where Cameron Hayward's father, Ironhead Hayward, played his college ball, and then he
went
in
to
New
Orleans.
Now you just unraveled all my progress.
I know
I'm
it's
back
difficult.
To square one.
It's very hard. It's very hard. And how Cam Cameron factors into all of this, I'm not sure. But anyway, all right, beat it, Wessling. A pleasure to see you. Thank you for stopping by. Thank you for helping Elliot so that he didn't get double teamed here. That would have been bad. All right. What do you think, Black Tie? Let's stop it there. That's one really good podcast. I really loved Brian Hartline. I loved the vigorous debate. Let's shut it down there. Listen here now, Czech Republic. We are going to stop this podcast, and we're going to do a third one this week, Black Tie?
That's what it is.
The trifecta.
Awesome.
The trifecta, right?
The picks. The Red Challenge Flag segment coming up for you on episode 3 of the Dave Damaschek football program this week. Be on the lookout for that one. In the meantime, thanks. Oh, and also we're going to be talking to Cameron Jordan. Like we said, call it episode 3, call it side B, and this was side A. Either way, be on the lookout for that one. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.
You're listening to Dave Damaschek. You're listening to Dave Damaschek. You're listening to Dave Damaschek.